Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today, we are joined by a very knowledgeable toy dog enthusiast, Ms. Wendy Paquette from Canada. Wendy is one of the co-breeders of the Shih Tzu that won the Group of the Garden in 2016, Grand Champion Winrich's Don't Stop Believing. She is a Canadian All-Breed judge and judges in the U.S., on a limited basis based on her Canadian status, but she has been breeding Shih Tzu since the early 70s, as well as a variety of other toy breeds, and she brings a great deal of knowledge about hard-won knowledge about how to successfully work with the smallest members of the purebred dog community. So thank you, Wendy. Appreciate you joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Laura. Thank you for asking me.
Excellent. And we are going to talk about toy dogs and the very special breeding challenges that come along with those. And
okay.
I know that you have been breeding Shih Tzu for, what, since Davy Crockett was a boy?
No, not quite.
Tell us a little bit about what started you in dogs and how long you've been at this.
Okay, well, in 1969, I was given a Samoyed as a rescue. Before that, I had never owned a dog. I'd never had any connections to dogs and didn't really even pay them any attention. So going into high school, my ex-husband and I, Richard Paquette, were given a Samoyed and we raised it. And someone asked us about having a stud service on the dog. And, wow, what is that? Knew nothing about it. So after looking into it, we decided to go down this road as high school students. And one thing led to another. We eventually did finish his championship and his obedience title, once we realized how this all worked out. And one day at a dog show, I happened to see an 8-month-old Shih Tzu puppy sitting on a table. Because, of course, with only having the Samoyed entered, you get kind of bored.
Right.
So it ended up that this Shih Tzu puppy was bred by Carrymount Shih Tzu, and Luke Below was the handler for them.
Okay.
We later met Luke and went down that road with Carrymount breeding. Unfortunately, Shih Tzu were not very common yet, and I was not able to find one in either the United States or Canada at that time. So I imported my first two Shih Tzu from England.
Wow. Okay. And so you guys were living in Canada, right, at that point?
Yes, we still do.
Okay. I thought you guys were still up that way. I know that your daughter Jody, also a professional handler down here in the U.S., so I didn't know if you were kind of floating back and forth these days being a grandma or what.
Oh, yeah, we get around. Yeah, Jody didn't feel that there was enough opportunity in Canada for her as a professional handler, so headed south.
So you brought these first two Shih Tzu from England, and that was the foundation for your breeding program that has been quite successful.
Yes, and I actually did breed one of those bitches to that 8-month-old puppy that I'd previously seen in 1971.
Wow.
And produced our first Best in Show winner in Canada.
Wow.
In 1974.
That is pretty amazing. That sort of serendipity. I love how those things kind of come together and go full circle. So talk to me about breeding toy dogs. Certainly all of us that are breeders have our special challenges, but I think that toy breeds just on sheer size create some of their own special needs, I guess.
Oh, definitely. As new breeders, it was very frustrating and enlightening, and because of where we lived, we didn't have a lot of people that could help us because we were, at that time, 5 hours north of Toronto, Ontario. There was not a lot of people up there even involved in dogs. So basically what we had to do was learn through experience and try to get all the help we could. And you and I both know those were the days prior to internet and cell phones and all that other stuff.
That was a long distance call that made your phone bill. I can't even think about it.
Exactly. And being young and starting a family, it was about 10 years of trial and error, not being previously involved in dogs. So it took us a while. But we soon came to realize that going to the United States to shows was the best thing for us, and especially the national specialties. And I think that is what a lot of breeders should strive for, is making sure they get to their nationals every year and talk to breeders.
Absolutely agree.
As far as going on from there, we decided that, well, if we're going to go to all the trouble of going to all these dog shows, we might as well learn how to show dogs. So Richard and I decided to start taking on a few clients while still raising our family of three children. And we did a lot of toy dogs. I did show a Maltese to number one with 22 best in shows, a Yorkshire Terrier to number one with 18 best in shows, and then a Pekingese to number two all breeds in Canada with 50 best in shows in Canada. So I did dabble in a lot of the toy breeds, and what we did as handlers is we dealt with our clients and we leased females from them so that we could have the experience of breeding all these different breeds. We did have some vision as to becoming judges down the road, so we thought this would help us in our careers, both as handlers and judges. So we leased bitches in toy poodles, Brussels Griffons, Maltese, Yorkies, Pekingese, and just had a litter or two on a lease basis.
Right, but then you had a mentor. This is kind of genius. You had a mentor in who you had leased the dog from, who was familiar in the breed.
Right, and that gave us a lot of insight into how these breeds came about and what was required to look after them and how to raise them, etc.
Absolutely. So what were those 10 years in the wilderness? What were some of those hard lessons? What stands out in your mind, some of the things that you had to learn the hard way, that you would like to share with other people not to learn the hard way?
Well, Shih Tzus are a breed that back in the 70s and 80s, there wasn't a lot of other breeders. So if you were going to breed out, you couldn't necessarily breed out genotype. You had to go phenotype. And I've learned through the years that I like that type of breeding. And I still do that today. I still, if I see a dog, even if it's not related to my pedigree whatsoever, I will do a test breeding on that dog. And if I don't like anything, okay, next. Just because you breed a litter doesn't mean you have to keep a puppy. And just because you breed a litter, they're not all show puppies. And I think that's where a lot of toy people go wrong, is that because they're small breeds, they don't take up a lot of room, they don't eat a lot, there's not a lot of cleanup after, they tend to keep more than what they should, just because they can.
Interesting. Okay, so as you were going through some of the other breeds, who were some of your mentors? Talk to me about some of your mentors and what they were able to teach you and what you were able to learn from them.
Bill and Nigel taught me an awful lot about Pekingese, and I actually did use one of their stud dogs on one of my girls, which produced the best in show winner also. They were very helpful in that way. And at the time, Nigel was also dabbling in Shih Tzu, so I did use one of his dogs once for one of my Shih Tzu bitches. And just having mentors like Bill and Nigel, they were like 6 hours away from me, but still fairly close that you could talk to them.
Nigel Aubrey Jones, for people who don't know, Nigel Aubrey Jones, very, very, very world-famous Pekingese breeder. And interestingly enough, not everybody today has heard of Nigel.
Well, I think that's one of the downfalls of dog breeding in general, whether it be toys, boarding, or whatever, is that the newcomers are not looking into the past history of how these breeds have come to the point where they are today. They just want the instant gratification of winning. They forget, as in my case, the 45 years of getting to where I am today. You know, all the pitfalls and the highs, the lows, the cesarean sections, etc., etc. One of my rules with any kennel hop that I've had over the years, I need to see 3 spots on the Shih Tzu when I walk into a room, especially the cut-down ones, 2 eyes and a butthole. And I think whether it be Pekingese, Havanese, Shih Tzu, any long-footed breed, those 3 areas are so important, because it doesn't take much for a toy dog to get impacted and then you've got issues. It's not like your big dogs where they're running out in the field and most of it just falls off.
Right.
Or Maltese or all those small breeds. People don't understand that you have to be able to see 2 eyes because their eyes are smaller and the hair falls over the eyes. And you don't want to have to actually physically look and feel each day. When they all look at me in the kennel, I want to be able to see every eye. Or if they're going away, I want to be able to see what's happening behind.
Right. And the cleanliness and the maintenance that goes into particularly the drop-coated breeds, the Shih Tzu, you're talking about hours and hours and hours of care every day.
Yes. Some of the breeds more than others. And it depends whether or not you're keeping a dog, whether it's just going to finish the championship or whether you have bigger visions for it.
Right. So your dog that you want to be a top special, you're going to be putting a little more time and effort into that coat maintenance.
Yes. One of my pet peeves with any toy people is that their dogs do not get enough exercise. And as a judge, I see that quite often. Too many of the breeders are just using these rack pens and not letting the dogs out to be dogs. And I think that even a Shih Tzu in full show coat can be a dog, or a Maltese in a full show coat.
Right. Talk to me about how you did that when you were showing dogs and your own dogs. Let's give people some specific ideas. How do you make a Shih Tzu that's a top special in show coat? How do you make that be a dog? Do you tie it up? How do we do that?
If you have proper coat, there's no need to tie it up because it's a strong hair. What I will do sometimes with the boys is just tie up the sides.
The pee areas, right.
Clean. Yes. My outdoor areas are covered, and we had snow 4 to 6 months of the year sometimes. My dogs would still go outside, even if it's like 20 below. But they're covered, and I had wood decking, and they would all go out on the wood decking 2 to 3 times a day, even in the wintertime.
And so what your runs are, how big? What do you use for toy size runs? Is that a 10-foot run or a 20-foot run? I mean, I've got quarter-acre paddocks, so, you know, I mean, what are we talking about for toy dogs?
No, I was just talking either 4x10 or 8x8. Just enough for them to get out and stretch their legs and run around a few circles and just get fresh air and freedom and learn that there's a life outside of a rack pen or a cage.
Right. Do they get to be on grass? I mean, this is something I've always wondered. I know this sounds completely novice and stupid, but seriously, do they get to play on grass? I mean, doesn't that do terrible things to their hair?
They get to play on grass till about 8-9 months of age. And then what I do is on bath days, I make sure they get out into one of the paddocks and have a good run.
Right.
And if it's a specialist coat, I will tie it up a little bit to keep it from getting broken off on the edges. But I still feel that they need to be dogs.
Good. I like it. Good recommendations for people. And another curiosity, do you find or have you found it useful to use like a treadmill or anything like that for exercise for some of the toy breeds?
I never got to that point. I know Jody does on a regular basis. Shih Tzus are couch potatoes, generally. You're lucky to get 2 or 3 times around the rink, then they think, okay, this is enough. where's my sofa?
They were not bred to be active dogs. We can acknowledge that.
No. Mm-hmm. But some of the toy breeds, like the Spaniels, the Cavaliers, I do believe if they're not going to get proper exercise outside, would require a little bit of work on a treadmill on a regular basis to keep them in shape. So I guess you wouldn't put a Pekingese on a treadmill.
No. No, that doesn't seem seem right to me.
It depends on the breed.
Right. So knowing your breed, I mean, I've used the treadmill with the pug dogs, for example. So knowing what you're working with, I think, is a good place to start in terms of their exercise requirements.
Yeah.
Very good.
Definitely. The other thing I wanted to mention about toy breeds is I, as a toy judge, am a firm believer in that first impression when you come in my ring, if you have breed type that just exudes what your breed is, I think judges have to look at that first and foremost and then get down to structure underneath. Toy breeds, you have to be a little bit more forgiving, in my opinion, as far as structure and bite. I think type is foremost.
They were bred not for a purpose of working, but for a purpose of basically being pretty and sitting on your lap. I mean, would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So I am a little bit more forgiving on soundness. I know some judges aren't, but I think that is what happens and how you get generic dogs is that you're not judging on type alone first. And teeth are a big issue with me. I am called the tooth fairy as far as Shih Tzu breeders go. But I mean, they have to be healthy pets and proper dentition is part of that.
Okay. And you judge all breeds in Canada and in the U.S., is that correct?
All breeds in Canada, and I'm not one of the grandfathered in judges, so I'm only allowed to do the 8 days in the U.S.
Okay.
Plus unlimited specialties.
Okay. And when you're down for the 8 days, you're still licensed. The Canadian to American system always fascinates me with the judges. You still can judge all breeds, but you have to only do it X number of days, correct?
Yeah.
So people who are hiring for panels, remember, some judges can only come down here a few days each year.
That's right. So when you ask us to do 4 days, we don't generally say yes.
Exactly.
It drops it down to 2 weekends a year instead of possibly 3.
Wow. Wow. So going back to the breeding aspect, and specifically breeding Shih Tzu, and you're talking about breed type. So talk to me about, in Shih Tzu, your vision. What is the difference between a great Shih Tzu and a good one?
I like to pick up my puppies at 8 weeks of age. If they don't have proper structure at 8 weeks and have that presence going around my puppy room, they generally are sold as pets. I am not one of these breeders that think every puppy in a litter is a show puppy just because it's perfectly marked. And a lot of breeders fall into that. Oh, it's got perfect markings, it's going to be a show dog attitude. No. I finish many a Shih Tzu that has a dark face. I think they should be appreciated as much as the open-faced ones. And when it comes to judging, I like the silhouette across the ring. Sometimes I would like to pretend that they're all black. And I have shown a lot of black dogs because the silhouette stands out drastically across the ring in the lineup with other dogs. I like to be able to see the two eyes from across the ring. I should not have to be able to walk right up to the dog to see where the eyes are. If they're as big as they're supposed to be and as round as they're supposed to be, they're going to be as big as that nose leather, and I'm going to see them from across the ring.
Interesting. Good.
Their temperament, they should never have their tail down. And recently I've seen a few judges put up dogs that did not carry their tail over their back. And that to me is a big no-no. Temperament is the first part of our essence of the breed type. And then it goes to head, then body, gait, and coat. Because these were only bred to be lap dogs. And people have to remember that most of the toy dogs were only bred to be lap dogs. So if they don't have a good temperament, they should not be put up.
They aren't the essence of their breed. And I think it was one of my interviews previously talked about the hallmarks of the breed and mm-hmm. what are those hallmarks of the breed. So in a Shih Tzu, it would be that merry temperament.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you watch Panda.
I love Panda.
He was being shown. His tail never stopped wagging. Ever,
that was
ever,
why
ever.
I loved him. He'd be on the table and I would watch his little tail wag and I'm like, oh, he's going to be bad.
Yeah. And everyone kept saying to me, well, you have to get him to behave better. And I said, no, that is Panda. That's what they're supposed to be. Let him enjoy that person coming up to give him his massage for the day.
Yes, I enjoyed watching him very much. So to the actual physical part of breeding and whelping toy puppies and talking about size, I don't know, what's an average birth weight for Shih Tzu?
Anywhere from 4 to 7 ounces.
That's teeny tiny. That's like the size of little mouses.
That's right.
So that's the part that just sort of fascinates me. Just the actual, how do you whelp and raise mice? I just...
Trust me, some of them look like mice too.
Yeah, I would just love to hear some of your tricks and tips for how do you work with itty tiny babies?
Well, you have to have calm, quiet, and a nice warm room and a heating pad. A lot of these toy breeds, if they get chilled from the very beginning, it's very difficult to get them back. And then that whole nose mucus area, because they don't have a lot of muzzle room, you have to clean all that area out because they can be very prone to pneumonia suddenly and quick.
So they'll aspirate when they're nursing or something?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. And basically, they're an easy breed. I've probably only had maybe 7 or 8 sections in 40 years. Not a lot, because they're easy whelpers. Pekingese were very, very difficult. I had to have 2 sections on both the litters that I had. So that ruled that out. I had fun with them showing them, but that's not for me. As a handler, I didn't have the time for that. Toy poodles, I went down that road. I actually have a cute picture of Jody Susan, a toy poodle at one of the dog shows. And one of the judges, Max Magner, actually put her up to a win. But fragile. And I had it, must have been the line that I was in, but I was having trouble with patellas and stuff like that. So that ruled that out. And Brussels Griffons, they are very difficult to stay alive once they're born. They're very difficult to get pregnant once they're born. So they were fun, but again, not for me. But it was fun going down this road of breeding all these different breeds.
Right. And obviously, Nigel, who else did you really feel that you got a lot of knowledge from in your mentorship?
Actually, Pat Keene-Fernandez.
Oh, I love
Pat. Helped me quite a bit in Maltese. She was my Maltese go-to. Yorkie, wasn't many Yorkie breeders in Canada at that time. So a lot of it was just getting to know different breeders in the U.S. where every time we went down to a show, I would ask questions and stuff like that. We also dabbled a little bit in terriers, and that's where we first met Peter Green with our Lakeland Terrier, and we ended up getting a wire fox terrier bred to one of his dogs. We had that Gaucho Excellence dog at the time and had a litter of them, but that wasn't for us. Although now Jody is quite involved in terriers.
Right. I was going to say, now that's where that came from. Okay.
Right.
Excellent. And so going forward, okay, this is something I try to get everybody to chime in on. Going forward in our sport, whether you're in the U.S. or Canada, what suggestions, what ideas, what recommendations can you make to new folks that are coming in and people that have been here for a while that would like to see it continue?
I think new breeders coming in have to find someone that they can work with and get along with and stick with. Too many of the new people coming in are floating around from this breeder to that breeder, and they're getting knowledge, but too much knowledge that is conflicting with one another. If you like a breeder that is involved in your breed, stick with it, because after 30, 40 years, they know what they're doing. It may take you a while to get something out of them that you really want, but you just don't call people up and say, I want to buy a show dog, because it's not going to work like that. And that's where I think some people go wrong, because they haven't done their history.
Yeah, it goes back to the history. So one recommendation, definitely learn your history. Read your standard. Read your books. Read your old, who are the breeders of the past.
Yeah, because I don't have a top-winning show dog out today doesn't mean I'm not someone that you would want to come to talk to about.
Exactly.
There are a lot of people out there that are just sitting at home that have been down that road for many, many years and have lots of wealth and knowledge. Those are the people that you want to get involved with and talk to. They may not be able to sell you a puppy, but the knowledge is still there.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. Well, I appreciate your time so much, Wendy. Thank you very much for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you down the road.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.